Hello, and welcome back to Author's Readings, where books come alive. I'm your host, Victor Volkman, and this week we're featuring a reading from the new book, Iraq Through a Bullet Hole, from Modern History Press. You can learn more about this book at iraqthroughabullethole.com. So sit back and listen to the voice of the author and renowned Iraqi playwright, Issam Jamil, as he presents the opening chapter from his memoir.
It was 1:30 a.m. when our four-wheel drive finally drew close to the border Jordan shares with Western Iraq. For someone flying from Sydney, Australia, to visit his mother country after having been away from it for 12 years, there was a sense of both gravity and adventure. I shared the back seat of the three-row-seater car with a young Jordanian man. Whilst in the middle seats, there was an Iraqi boy of about 20 sitting in front of me. A tall Iraqi young man and a bald Iraqi man on the left side. The front seats were occupied by a Christian Iraqi lady in her 50s, along with the stumpy young Iraqi driver. During the travel from the Jordanian capital, Amman, I attempt to avoid any dialogue with my fellow passengers, who were seizing on any chance to talk. Normally, I like to talk to people, but this time I felt it might lead me to disclose my nationality. I have been warned by my wife and so many friends not to reveal my Australian nationality to strange people. Many stories had been spreading in the Iraqi community, stories that talked about people of Iraqi background holding foreign passports being kidnapped during their visit to the mother country. For this reason, I held an Iraqi passport besides my Australian one, which I had placed in my pocket. I had planned to use the Iraqi passport to gain entry into the Iraqi territory. Due to the dangerous threatening foreigners, especially Australian, since Australia was and still is one of the countries in the military coalition with the United States of America. The serious part of the trip hadn't begun yet. We had to drive about 700 kilometers before reaching Baghdad. Indeed, this road is the most dangerous part in this trip, for many military incidents had occurred on it. As a result, the traffic had been stopped many times during the year before my visit. Many horrible stories concerning this road come to my mind. They were not fictitious stories, but real ones transmitted by many TV channels or by various persons telling how many people had been attacked and killed on this road. Also, many foreigners were kidnapped and had disappeared. The passengers who accompanied me didn't show much concern for the coming danger, but I was able to read the inescapable destiny imprinted on their features in spite of all their attempts to hide it. The car slowed to stop, for we were at the Jordanian border office. I had to pass through this isolated place 12 years ago when I had left Iraq. I never conceived that one day I would have to come this way again. And I never imagined that Saddam Hussein regime could be changed or that I would be able to return to Iraq. But here I was again, standing in a mobile wooden room office where they stamp the passports. The other passengers finished all the procedures and left the office while I was standing at the counter waiting to solve my problem. The Jordanian officer told me that I should pay a fine of about $300 American because I didn't have a residency stamp in my Iraqi passport. That was when I realized that I had made the mistake of not transferring the residency stamp from the Australian one onto the Iraqi passport. You can use your Australian passport without paying any fines, said the Jordanian officer. Because I wasn't able to afford that amount of money, I had to go through the immigration procedures as an Australian. I held out my passport and gave it to the officer, who stamped it with the departure date. I looked over my Australian passport, thinking that all my attempts to hide my nationality were now gone with the wind. Iraq, 26th of June, 2005. We left the Jordanian border behind and pressed forward into Iraqi territory. While we passed under the big archway where the cars can go through to the Iraqi border, I couldn't see the huge image of Saddam Hussein that used to be in front of that arch. It must have been destroyed or damaged after the collapse of Saddam's regime, I thought, as our car edged cautiously along the narrow, twisted track. We could see some American soldiers at the other end, at the checkpoint. Some passengers asked the driver to reduce his speed, even though he was driving very slowly. The woman in the front seat looked at him and cautioned, "If you move too fast, they might shoot at the car." These few words were enough to put fear into my bones. But there was no way to retreat, and I had to go forward. When the car stopped at the checkpoint, I was able to see the features of the American soldiers suspiciously watching the passengers. It was the first time I had ever seen real American soldiers, not just in the movies. After they checked our passports, one of the soldiers tried to be friendly when he observed that the woman in the front seat was wearing a cross on her neck. "Are you Baptist?" he asked. But she was silent, for she couldn't understand English. I was looking through the right-hand window at a soldier. It is going to be really hard work when the soldiers ask us to take our heavy luggage out to be checked, I thought to myself. But the soldiers gave the order to the driver to move towards to the office where the passports were stamped. I was taken aback, wondering why they didn't ask us if we had something to declare in our luggage. A gas station and a restaurant waited on the left side of the main road, about 500 meters beyond the checkpoint. The car drove off the main road to queue with the many other cars that were already waiting to fill up with gas. As soon as the car pulled up, the driver told us to stay inside for safety. A few minutes later, I realized he was right when a quarrel broke out nearby. A thin man with dark brown skin was trying to get somebody out of the back seat of a car next to us. Some people gathered round to have a look, while the person inside the car struggled to stay inside. When the thin man couldn't hold him out, he began to boot him savagely, while some other men tried to drag him from the other side of the car. I was looking at the weary, unconcerned faces of the people all around, who were watching it as a familiar scene. Eventually, the man in the car gave in, so they were able to get him out and took him away, forcing him to go with punches and slaps. This was the first sinister sign, and I could have predicted what would be in the wind. It was now 2 a.m., but the place was crowded with people from everywhere. There were drivers, passengers, and some people called Bahara, Arabic for marine. I found out later that this is what Iraqi people call those who smuggle and sell gas illegally. They were buying gas from remote gas stations to sell in the large cities at high prices, or to smuggle it to Jordan. I wondered why they were called Bahara, since they were very far from the sea. Maybe they got this name as most oil smuggling is being done through the sea at Al-Basra port in the south of Iraq, I thought to myself. Sitting in the car all this time was enough to make me bored, so that when some of the passengers got out, I did too. I was watching the slow movement of the long line of cars at the gas station, thinking of the beaten man. He might have been one of the terrorists, I thought, when the thin man again emerged from the restaurant. He walked very proudly, explaining what had happened regarding the beaten man, though nobody asked him. He thought that there was no law forgetting he's now in an Islamic country, he said. He was trying to buy a beer in the restaurant. He began to proclaim the new system in Iraq, which was now based on Islamic law, Sharia. He kept talking about the new rules in Iraq while I was able to look at his dirty, creased clothes as he came closer. What a poor beaten man, I said to myself, thinking that if the beaten man had been punched and slapped just for asking to buy a beer, what would have happened if he had drunk it?
Thank you for listening this week to Authors Readings, where books come alive. This week, we've been listening to a reading by Issam Jamil from the new book, Iraq Through a Bullet Hole, from Modern History Press. You can learn more about this book at iraqthroughabullethole.com. I'm Victor Volkman. Thanks for tuning in to our podcast.